Can you tell us about the Torres Strait Treaty between Australia and Papua New Guinea? What it actually involves?
The treaty is a long-standing treaty. It's been in place since the 70s. It permits relatively free movement of people across the border, but limits the purpose of those visits to traditional purposes, which excludes commercial trade.
You've mentioned in an article on The Conversation that there is an issue with the Australian government's approach to border management, which relies on a hierarchy of haves and have-nots for those with treaty status and those with not. Could you explain this for us?
Yes, certainly. So the only villages that are allowed to take advantage of the treaty on the PNG side are 14 nominated treaty villages. But there's many other villages, sometimes two villages that are side by side. One has treaty status and the other does not. So that means that the villages with treaty status have privileges, and they tend to protect those privileges. And so this is an example of how the border management is effectively extending into the PNG side of the border.
And indeed, those that mention of traditional uses of, or to sort of traditional kind of travel within the region, is that a little bit hard to nail down in order to determine when the Australian Border Force is kind of making hard and fast rules? You mentioned, of course, like in instances of trade.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's very much open to interpretation. And what is as the border force is hardening the border, it is having an adverse impact on the livelihoods of people on the PNG side, and we would argue that that's actually ultimately undermining the security of the border, because it's not in the national interest, or it's become more and more difficult to manage the border when people on the other side are so struggling with a high level of underdevelopment.
And we're seeing this hardening of the border due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Most recently, yes. The border was closed about a month before PNG's first case of COVID. But predating COVID, there has been a period of the border getting harder with more, including bans on certain days of the week and bans on entire villages. So this, the hardening of the border predates COVID.
Well, indeed, you've just been involved with this book, Too Close to Ignore, Australia's Borderland with Papua New Guinea and Indonesia. Could you explain to us a little bit about what this one explores?
Ultimately, it's really trying to understand what's happening on the PNG side of the border. And the Australian government deploys massive resources on border management and on dealing with the effects of cross-border movement. But ultimately, these efforts are not going to succeed unless the underdevelopment on the PNG side is dealt with, either through better border management practices or through improved PNG government or aid assistance coming in on the PNG side.
Indeed, you've pointed out that we see a great deal of money being poured into this kind of border management, but not so much on the aid side. This is somewhat out of whack.
If you look at it, there is actually a fair amount of aid assistance coming into the area, but it tends to be distorted by border management. So, for example, a lot of the aid assistance just goes to those 14 treaty villages, not the other villages. And while that makes sense from a border management logic, it doesn't make sense from a population health perspective. Diseases don't care about whether two villages next to each other, whether one's in the treaty and one isn't. Disease blissfully doesn't care about borders or administrative designations like that.
What kind of impacts does the book sort of measure?
Well, we look at the absolute levels of poverty, and it was quite a surprise to us. The poverty line set by the World Bank is $1.90 US a day, and the levels of poverty were, people were earning less than half of that. But if that wasn't hard enough, the costs were incredibly high. The cost of basic commodities, including fuel, was more expensive than what it was in Australia, with fuel costing $3 to $4 per litre. So this combination of very low income and very high costs means that people really don't have a chance. So they do need a degree of aid assistance. But in all borders, globally, one of the main ways that people survive economically is through cross-border trade. And that has always been prescribed and is increasingly difficult for people to do any trade or across the border into Australia.
And any other solutions in terms of aid strategy you would say needs to be offered up?
Well, there's a whole suite of different things that can be done in terms of the aid program, everything from water supply systems to improved transportation. We need the health system in the South Fly needs to be working a lot better. There's a lot happening in Daru, the nearest regional centre, but there's not very little happening in the way of healthcare in the villages. But there's also there are opportunities for commercial trade to occur across the border into Australia through things like crab fishery, which would be quite profitable for Torres Strait Islander businessmen as well. But these things are currently not allowed under the treaty.
Well, Mark, do appreciate you joining us. Best of luck with the book. Best of luck going forward with that one. Do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Sean.